Boker Tov. Brochim Abayim. I'm Shalom Berger. As part of my responsibilities here at McClellan Herzog, I organize, I put together the English language program, the Meiyun. So it's certainly, thank you very much. So it is very gratifying to see so many of you here with us today. We have the zchut, the privilege, the honor of having Rav Moshe Lichtenstein, Rav Yeshiva Yeshivat Har Etzion, giving our first shiur today. The shiur is sponsored by Shelly Weiss in memory of Tom Weiss, Zichron Ol Livracha, Moshe Meir ben Avraham HaKohen, by his loving family. His love of Torah learning remains our inspiration. Rav Moshe.
Tov. Thank Dr. Berger and Rav Shalom for organizing the Holy Meiyun, and it's wonderful to be back after three-year break. It's great to be back and to see people panim el panim and not panim el screen. So I thank you very much for coming, and it really is exciting. So I took a topic this morning, the rise and fall of Shlomo HaMelech. The problem is pretty obvious, I think. Shlomo HaMelech goes, what Chazal call, mi igra rama libira amikta, right, from the pinnacle of achievement, religious achievement, to the depths of Avodah Zarah. Shlomo HaMelech, we all consider him to be tremendous, you know, he's a hugely inspiring figure. Also, we discover, if we move on from Beit HaMikdash and how he builds the Mikdash and his central place in the whole process of building the Mikdash, we discover psukim which are extremely, extremely negative. I'll begin to just to display the contrast. We have a pasuk in Divrei Hayamim. I'll read it in a moment. Divrei Hayamim, Perek. Excuse me, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek. What? Okay. Divrei Hayamim, Perek Aleph, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Chaf Tet, Pasuk Chaf, moment, Pasuk Chaf Gimel, Vayeshev Shlomo al Kisei Hashem Lemelech. Shlomo sits on the divine chair, al Kisei Hashem. It's almost a unique phrase in Tanakh. Someone's actually sitting on God's chair. So, Kisei Hashem means kingdom, it means God rules the world, and he rules in God's as God's delegate. But at the end of the day, he's obviously been chosen, he's obviously at the pinnacle of the religious accomplishment by being Kisei Hashem. And we have, so let's go for a Sefer Melachim for a moment, in Perek Gimel, in Perek Gimel, Pasuk Gimel, everything here is Melachim Aleph, of course. Vayehav Shlomo et Hashem. Shlomo loves the Kodesh Baruch Hu. Vayehav Shlomo et Hashem. Lalechet b'chukot David Aviv. He follows in David HaMelech's footsteps. And Shlomo here is tremendously, a deeply religious figure. Vayehav Shlomo et Hashem. I think all of us know that Avat Hashem is not an easy madrega to arrive at. It's not easy for a person to say or for Tanakh to actually tell us that a person is an Ohev Hashem. That's quite a level of accomplishment. So Shlomo is an Ohev Hashem. He's the person who builds Beit HaMikdash. He has the unique privilege of building the Mikdash. And so on and so forth. I could quote a few more psukim over here, but I think the point is pretty clear. Let me just add that the psukim also talk about how successful he was. Am Yisrael is, everything is wonderful. Let's take a look at Perikei and Sefer Melachim. It says there in the beginning of Perikei, the last pasuk of Perik Dalit Chaf, Yehuda v'Yisrael Rabim Kachol Asher Eliam LaRov. Am Yisrael is as populous as the sand on the beach. Ochlim v'Shotim U'Smechim. Everyone is able to eat, drink, and make merry. Everyone is happy. No, it's people, you have a society which everyone is happy. Ochlim u'shotim u'smechim. Shlomo has brought, so to speak, Am Yisrael to the proper place. Everyone is happy. Ochlim u'shotim u'smechim. it's a reign of prosperity, of happiness. Everything seems to be perfect. We continue to pasuk aleph, the next pasuk. Ushlamoya moshel b'chol mamlachot. Shlomo rules the whole vicinity of Eretz Yisrael, its whole vicinity. Eretz plishtim ad gvul Mitzrayim. All of Eretz Yisrael, there are no security issues, and there are no wars. And to continue a bit more, to pasuk hey, vayishev Yehuda v'Yisrael avetach. Everything is secure, no miluim, no army, no terrorism. Ish tachat gafno v'tachat einato. Right, this is the idyllic picture. Ish tachat gafno v'tachat einato. Everyone is in their backyard under their fruit trees. Midan v'ad Beersheva. In other words, all of Eretz Yisrael. Now, all this is with divine siyata lishmaya. Because Shlomo was able to accomplish what David did not, or if you want, he's building on David's achievements. He comes. Everything, in other words, Shlomo is an Ohev Hashem. He's sitting on Kaviyachol, the Kisei Hashem. Everyone is happy. There's peace, prosperity. Everything seems to be perfect. And all this is why? Because he's close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu is giving him all the Siyata Dishmaya. Yet, we move now to the end of his reign. I'm now in Perek Yud Aleph and Melachim Aleph. V'hamelech, Pasuk Aleph. V'hamelech Shlomo Ahav Nashim Nachiyot Rabot. He loves many, many non-Jewish women. V'et Bat Paro, and specifically Bat Paro more than all the others. I'm skipping here a bit. I moved on to Pasuk Vav. V'yas Shlomo Hara Be'inei Hashem. He did what's evil in God's eyes. It's a very strong language of condemnation. If you look in Concordance or you run a search in Bar Ilan, you'll see the phrase Vayas Hara B'nei Hashem appears often in Sefer Melachim, both Melachim Aleph and Melachim Beit. But look at all the other figures that he's grouped together with. Includes Achav, Menashe, and a bunch of lesser figures, but all of whom are extremely negative. Vayas Hara B'nei Hashem, to have a statement that you did what is wrong or evil in God's eyes, it's a very strong statement. Here he goes from Vayahav Shlomo at Hashem, with Vayas Hara Be'inei Hashem, Vilo Milei Achrei Hashem Kedivrei, and he doesn't follow the way David HaMelech did. We'll get back to this phrase later on. Anyway, you see here this tremendous fall from the person at the apex of religious accomplishment. He's a dargav ohev Hashem to vayas hara b'nei Hashem. I would add, it seems to me that it's a relatively unique phenomena. In other words, at least in the political figures of Tanakh, you know, we go through Sefer Shmuel, Sefer Melachim, you have evil figures and you have righteous figures. You have tzadikim and rishaim. It's extremely rare to have figures who have been transformed or changed. Either they are good from beginning to end, or they're bad from beginning to end. It's rare to find someone who somehow in midlife he changes. It's not too difficult to understand. People usually at the stage, at a later stage in their lives, they're more or less fixed in their ways. But Shlomo is the only other melech that I can think of, if I remember correctly, is Achav. But by Achav is a whole different story and maybe merits a different session in a different year. But aside from Achav, who has some kind of tshuva at the end of his life, everybody else, they're constant. Either they're always good, they're constantly good, they're constantly bad. But this idea that you change and you're transformed and you rise and fall, that is unique to Shlomo. And Achav, and I'll just already add parenthetically, by Achav also, it's related to his wife, apparently. But we'll get back to... I cannot read the psukim, what can I do? Anyways, to get back to... Now, Chazal did the same thing with Menashe. That's very Midrash. In the Psukim, you have it only by Echav. Anyway, whether it's unique or not, doesn't matter. You have to understand this. And the Chazal emphasize the radical the discrepancy, A, and the response of Shlomo. Take a look in the first source. And we don't let Chazal guide us here now through a good deal of the continuation. Ve'yehi le'ed ziknat Shlomo. When Shlomo became old, Nashav ituat levavo, his wives deflected him to a different path. The crucial point here is, though, is the statement that he was evil. Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, Shimon Yochai, who knew a thing or two, Noach lo li Shlomo shehei gorev bivin. Shlomo would have preferred to be a sewer cleaner, or a chimney sweeper if you want. Shelo nichtava mikra zeh. Shlomo would have preferred to collect sewage every day rather than the Tanakh should say about him that he did hara b'nei Hashem. But he did. And the Medrasher is coming out to point out how far he's fallen from his original place. Let's go on to the next Midrash, which is even more extreme. Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shoben Levi. Both Rabbi Chanina and Shoben Levi combined to make the following statement. The Mishnah Sanhedrin claims that there are three kings and four laymen who don't have Chelek Olam Haba. Kol Yisrael yesh lem Chelek Olam Haba. All of Am Yisrael has the privilege of entering Olam Haba, except for seven exceptions. Three kings, four hediotot, laymen. Come, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Shoben Levi, and say, when Chazal made this statement, Yatzta bat kol ve'amra. It's a pasuk in Sefer Yov. I'm skipping the pasuk now, but moving on to the Chazal's utilization of it. Bikshu ulitzaref et Shlomo imahen. No more, no less. Chazal said that Shlomo should be on the list. The list should have said four kings and four laymen. Arba'a melachim, arba'a diotot. And the fourth king should be Shlomo. It's astounding. Chazal claimed, no more, no less, that Shlomo HaMelech, let me remind you, Pasuk in Tehillim, Shlomo Elokim Mishpatecha LeMelech Tein. Shlomo is the ideal king. He's the king who has justice. He's the king, to a large degree, is the paradigm for Melech HaMashiach. Shlomo Elokim Mishpatecha LeMelech Tein. He's the model how Mashiach should conduct his kingdom and his rule. And Chazal say that he was supposed to be in the list of those who don't have Chelek Olam Haba. Ad kidei kach, he deteriorated. Ba David v'nishtatech lifnehen. According to this Midrash, Shlomo, on his own merit, should have ended up in the list of Ein Chelek Olam Haba. Only David HaMelech came and utilized his zechut avot, and only in David's privilege was Shlomo let off the hook and allowed to enter Olam Haba. Yeshomer, and there's a second opinion, Eish yatz'ah mi beit kodesh hakodeshim, a fire came out of kodesh hakodeshim, out of the mikdash, v'liyata sivotehem, the fire wanted to consume them, or to put it differently, the zchut of Shlomo HaMelech, they built the Beis HaMikdash, was enough to point out that Shlomo is not 100% corrupt, he's not totally negative, and therefore he does not deserve such a fate. In other words, in this case, it's Shlomo's privilege, and we'll discuss this as we go on, indeed, the tension between the builder of the Mikdash and the builder of all these temples for idolatry, which is what he does in Perek Yud Aleph. At any rate, just to summarize this point, you have statements here in Chazal that Shlomo realizes to what a depraved religious place he's arrived. Noach lo sheyehei gorev bivin, he'd be a sewer cleaner, and ein lo chelek olam haba. Okay, now, this is one opinion Chazal, which take what we see in Tanakh, and if you want, make it more intense, and make the end and the ra, the evil, make it much worse. You have another current in Chazal, which try to mitigate it, try to make it better, and try to somehow relax the sin and to minimize it. Source number three, I won't read it now, but the basic point there is he didn't really marry non-Jewish women. He married women who were mitgayer, you know, did gerus. The gerus was problematic. Without getting to all the halachic discussions here, it wasn't as if he married non-Jewish women. But my thing is like this. Today I'm not coming to discuss here intermarriage. I'm going to discuss Shlomo HaMelech and particularly Avodah Zarah. So even if he married women who are legally Jewish, but he was Oved Avodah Zarah, it doesn't really change. It's not a game changer in terms of our problem. So if we move on to source number four, this is a quote from the Rambam. He once more highlights the problem. I'm in the first line of source number four. Al yale al da'atcha. Don't even dare to think. Shimshon, Hamushet Yisrael, Shimshon, who rescued Am Yisrael, O Shlomo Melech Yisrael, O Shlomo HaMelech, Shenikra Yedid Hashem. This is in Divrei Yamim. Shlomo is called Kadosh Baruch Hu's friend, companion, however you want to translate Yedid. And there's a midrash in the Gemara that says, Yavo Yedid Ben Yedidim Bivneh. Shlomo, who is the friend of a friend, will come and build the Beis HaMikdash, which is called the Yedid, etc., etc. Shlomo is intimate with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So the Rambam says, don't dare think that someone so intimate with the Kadosh Baruch Hu, that he actually married non-Jewish women. The Ram has a long theory here. It's a very famous source. It has a lot. It's often quoted in all the controversies about gerus nowadays. The bottom line is that the Rambam says that Shlomo married women who were megayer. The gerus wasn't perfect. The woman continued to be avodah avodah zarah. And therefore he's blamed. And we'll get to this in a moment in greater depth. What Ram is trying to do, though, and this is the crucial point here, as opposed to what we saw in Yerushalmi before, that Shlomo HaMelech belongs in the list of those who don't belong in Olam Haba, Ram says, are you kidding? Yedid Hashem. Shlomo is considered Yedid Hashem. He's so close to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, he belongs in Olam Haba, of course, and it's a minor transgression. In other words, Shlomo miscalculated, basically. He miscalculated the gerus. He miscalculated the effect the gerus would have upon the woman's behavior, how he respond. So it's an error of judgment, but it's not he's doing evil. He made a mistake, and mistakes happen. And therefore, don't even begin to contemplate the idea that he belonged, like of Yerushalmi. Like, and the Rambam here is being kind of, the Rambam here is clearly being polemical. He's being polemical because he also knows the Yerushalmi, and it's clear to him that there are differing opinions, or different approaches, how to judge a Shlomo. Okay, now we'll see this a bit more in depth. We're at the source number five, and here the thing is explicit. Amar Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yonatan. So Rav Shmuel bar Nachmani studied Rabbi Yonatan's name. Kol ha'omer Shlomo chata ino toe. Anybody who claims that Shlomo sinned is in grave error. Ino toe, he's totally wrong. Shini emar, no midrash. The Rambam basically judges from his personality. Right? The Rambam said he's Yedid Hashem, he's God's companion, so he has to be. We can't view him negatively. The Medrash likes to work with more with the text itself, a much closer reading of the text. The Medrash doesn't just make a broad statement about Shlomo's personality. But the Medrash now, it takes us into the Pasuk itself. Shini Emar, this is the Pasuk we read before. It's Perek Yud Aleph Pasuk Dalid. Ve'yihi le'ed ziknat Shlomo, in Shlomo's old age, Nasha vituot levavo, said before his wives deflected him, his personality was not close to Kadosh Baruch Hu like David. So the Medrash says, "Kilevav David avivu delohaya." He wasn't like David. Notice the pasuk is not telling us that he was an oved avodah zarah, that he was chas v'shalom worshiping idolatry. It tells us he wasn't as positive as David. Or it's relative. He was not on the level of David HaMelech. David HaMelech was, now, Very few people on David HaMelech's level. Shlomo had the potential maybe to follow David HaMelech's footsteps, but at some point he was unable to sustain the level of religious commitment, or if you want, the religious intimacy with Kadosh Baruch Hu that David had. Loyal v'avo shalem kilvav David Aviv. Kilvav David Aviv to lohav. He wasn't like David. Mechtanam ilochad. He didn't sin. Not being like David HaMelech is not a sin. It means you don't rise to a high level. But it doesn't mean you sin. So in other words, Shlomo is not Chas v'Shalom a sinner. He's a person who isn't on the level of his father. Many people aren't able to be at the level of their forefathers. So Shlomo is also that. Michta lochata. Okay, now the Gemara begins her whole long back and forth. In terms of, to keep my eye on the watch, I won't read the whole thing. The basic point is that the Gemara's bottom line is like this. Shlomo himself did not worship Avodah Zarah. Rather, he allowed his wives to do so. In other words, he was willing to look the other way and have a blind eye to what they were doing. Or to quote it, it's two lines from the... five lines in the bottom. He should have protested. He didn't. In fact, he didn't protest. That itself is considered a sin. We'll discuss this later on. Blinad there. So obviously, it's trying to minimize. But the whole aim of this medrash is: you claim that Shlomo sinned. You're wrong. However, the Medrash here is basically overruling the Pasuk. Right? The Pasuk says, Vayas hara b'nei Hashem. So the Medrash said before, the Medrash points out that it's not quite hara b'nei Hashem. It's not total evil or objective evil. The fact that he doesn't rise to the level he should have been at, and this is a good topic for a Tshuva Drasha, the fact that you don't arrive at the level you should be at is already, Kadosh Baruch Hu views that negatively. It's hara b'nei Hashem. Kadosh Baruch Hu views it extremely negative that you could have been a higher level and you're not. In other words, not achieving your potential and not realizing what you could have religiously is also considered a grave sin. That's one way to look at it, but I would like to add a second point. There's a whole list of these figures in that Gemara. This is the conclusion of Kolomei Ruven Chatayna Toeh, David Chata, whole list, Reuven, David, a whole bunch of figures that Tanakh claims that they sinned, and the Gemara comes and says, no, they didn't sin, it's they didn't really sin. And some deeper level, the problem here isn't that Shlomo did not rise to the level of David. It's rather the following. Technically, he didn't sin. Meaning, we're able to solve that. No, I'll say the following. Every time, every mitzvah has a sense, there's a dual reason, or there's a dual obligation to obey it. One is because mitzvot have value. Right? Mitzvot, Sefer Chinuch, every mitzvah explains to us what's the benefit. Right? The mitzvah to eat matzah is to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, to have gratitude to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, to recognize the fact that we were chosen as His people, etc., etc. And the mitzvah of Shabbos, to remember creation, and so on and so forth. However, there's always also an imperative. Because Baruch Hu commanded you. Right? The Gemara says, Masechet Rosh Hashanah, Lama Tokim. Why did we blow shofar? Now, I can give you many, many drashot. Everyone here hears every year at least 2, 3, 4 drashot. Why do you blow shofar? Rav Sadia Gaon has 10 reasons to blow shofar. Some more convincing than others. But the Gemara doesn't answer any of that. It says, Lama tokim? Rachmana amar yom tra yelechem. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu said to blow shofar. Why do we blow? Because we were told to. In other words, every mitzvah has an imperative which is independent and nothing to do with the reason. The rationale is the spirit of the law. But you are obligated to the letter of the law because you have a divine command, and Kadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do it. It's a categorical imperative, irrespective of whether or not you understand, don't understand, etc. Shlomo, now all these midrashim mean he didn't sin technically. He was able to avoid the actual... In other words, in terms of the letter of the law, he's fine. He didn't formally sin. But in terms of the spirit of the law, namely, in terms of the imperative, he was able to find a loophole. But in terms of the spirit, in terms of what Kadosh Baruch Hu expects of us, what is the mindset, or to put it differently, not from the halachic, but from the religious perspective, excuse such a statement, what the Gemara is telling us, the Tanakh tells us he sinned in terms of the essence. The Gemara is telling us he didn't sin in terms of the practice and the detail. So it solves the problem somewhat, but somewhat. Anyway, to conclude this, the opening section, there's a huge discrepancy between the early years and the later years. There are the years in which is Yedid Hashem, there are the years of Yehav Shlomo et Hashem, there are the years of Ashlomo Harab B'nei Hashem, there are the years in which he builds Beis HaMikdash, there's the years in which he's building all these temples, for all these pagan temples for all of these idols that his wives are importing wholesale to Yerushalayim. And therefore you have this conflicting appraisal. Is he basically an extremely positive figure who made some mistakes and made some miscalculations, B'Sofia Mav? Or is it someone who becomes corrupt, he has huge potential, he grows up in David HaMelech's home, he falls in David's footsteps, at some point, for whatever reason, he becomes corrupt, religiously corrupt, and he goes off the path, and he ends up in a list where he should have ended up in a list that people don't belong in Olam Haba, unlike almost every other person in Jewish history, except for seven other people. And you have these conflicting approaches. Okay, having said this, let's try to understand, put differently, is a deep ambivalence here. What's going on with him? Or deep ambiguity, or if you want ambivalence, what's going on with Shlomo? Okay, now let's move on to the next stage, which is to understand what's going on with the story with the wives and the idolatry, or to put differently also, how could this happen? Until now, I've been describing, is that how? What? What happened? He went from Yedid Hashem to Ve'as HaRab B'nei Hashem. But why? What was the motivation? How could he go down the slippery slope? That we haven't seen yet. So let's now move on to that. Source number six. This is a crucial source. And I would say the different opinions here are not too surprising at the end of the day. Ve'amelech Shlomo Ahav Nashim Nochriot. Shlomo loved non-Jewish wives or women. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Amar. Okay, this is the Shem of Shimon Yochai who we met before in source number one, I think. This is the Shem of Shimon Yochai who said that Shlomo would have wanted to be a sewer cleaner rather than to have this pasuk. He obviously thinks the pasuk is extremely negative, and now we know why. Ohev mamash liznot. He basically says, Shlomo follow the sexual appetites. Ohev liznot. There's no real justification. It's the Yetzer Hara. It's desire. It's simply sexual appetite overcame him. Ohev liznot. Shlomo loves liznot. And because of that, he lost his religious life, his stature, his values. He was, because at the end of the day, he couldn't control his appetites. Ahav mamash liznot. Chananya ben Achi, Rabbi Shor, me'al shem lo titchatein bam. Okay, it's the same basic approach. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Rabbi Yossi has the extreme opposite view. Nemoshchan l'divrei Torah, l'kavan tahat kemfei ha-shchina. Shlomo was engaged in Kiruv. Shlomo, it says here, l'kavan tahat kemfei ha-shchina. It's a... Let me now explain. Let me try to explain and calm you down a bit. Shlomo HaMelech, there's another characteristic in which Shlomo is very different than David. David is insular. David has no contact with the other nations except wars. They go to battle. But David has very little contact with Hiram. He has a little contact. But essentially, David is insular. There's no attempt to have diplomacy. There's no attempt to expand or to have any cultural contact with the surrounding nations. Shlomo is very different. Shlomo has a whole foreign policy. Shlomo interacts with other nations. Shlomo expands. Shlomo no longer is looking inwards. He's looking outwards. We have the Sfer Malkat Shva. We have the cooperation with Hiram Melech Tzor, which is extensive in building Beis HaMikdash. Even building the Mikdash, he employs or he cooperates extensively with Hiram. So Shlomo's whole mindset is very different. And the Pesukim tell us that he controls much more territory. Everyone looks up to him. His glory is recognized by all of the surrounding nations. Now, because Shlomo has all of this contact with the outside world and with the surrounding nations, therefore, at some point, Shlomo takes upon himself, and let me remind you, Shlomo's tefillah, when he dedicates the Mikdash, right? When Shlomo dedicates the Mikdash, he emphasizes not only Jews will come to use the Mikdash, rather the Goyim, the surrounding nations, will also come to the Mikdash and will also worship over there. If we go to Perek Chet for a moment, after he describes all Am Yisrael utilize the Mikdash often, Perek Chet Pasuk Mem Aleph, V'gam El HaNochri Asher Lo Memcha Yisrael Hu. Even the goy who are non-Jewish, uba me'eretz rechoka leman shemecha, they'll come from distant lands to worship. Ki beiti beit tefila yikarei l'chol ha'amim. Beis HaMikdash is universal, right? Yishayahu's vision, right, that in times of Mashiach, so all the goyim will flock to Beis HaMikdash. Nachon yahar beit Asher b'rosh harim v'nisa migvot v'naharu alav goyim rabim. All of their waves of goyim coming to worship the Mikdash. This is what Shlomo envisions. Because the goyim will hear about your glorious name, and your power and your might, etc. Shlomo has this vision that not only does he have diplomatic relations with the surrounding nations, he's a beacon, a religious beacon to everybody. So after you just, when you dedicate the Mikdash, you talk about the goy who comes. So it's not illogical to assume that later on, his interaction, the interactions which are recorded later on, are the same mindset. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi says, Shlomo, in order to draw the goy to the Mikdash, he enters into friendly relationships, and these eventually translate into marriage. And then he miscalculates. Of course, Shlomo thought that if from above he could integrate and bring them into his world, he basically thought he'll bring them into his world. He'll bring them into his world, they'll marry into, then they're marrying into his, they're coming to his, to Yerushalayim. He think by integrating them into the world in which he's the king, and he will be able to integrate them also religiously. And it's been known to happen. So therefore, I think for a moment, just Havdalah, right? When Henry VIII decided that England should be Anglican and not Catholic, so that's what happened at the end, right? In other words, he basically, from above, he was able to transform a nation religiously, logical or not, but that's more or less. And so Shlomo sees you can drive culture and religious trends from above as well. And Shlomo believes that he will be able, if he will bring these wives, this will have tremendous impact later on in their lands. And he sees the Moshchan L'Divrei Torah L'Kavan Tachat Kanfei HaShchina. Now, of course, it's an error. He miscalculated, obviously. But the motivation here is obviously positive. Or to put it differently, the same way we saw before, two approaches, how to evaluate whether he was right, how positive or negative he was, you have the same two approaches over here in regarding also what actually happened. The Yerushalmi concludes, Ishkach, the last line, Tamar, Rabbi Shimon Yochai, V'chanev, V'zechada. So you have three, the Yerushalmi is like this. The bottom line is, we've discovered that Rabbi Shimon, and Rabbi Hanina, and Rabbi Eliezer, all three agree that Shlomo was brought down by his appetites. And Rabbi Yossi disagrees with all three of them. Rabbi Yossi is a much more positive take on Shlomo. Okay, this is stage number two. Now let's move on to stage number three. And I would like to present you basically a suggestion which is somewhere in between. It's different than Rabbi Shimon Yochai, but it's also different than Rabbi Yossi. Just somehow understand how you really have these conflicting currents, if you want, within Shlomo, or what really happened there to divert him from Yedid Hashem. So, to do this, I think we have to go back and take a look at Shlomo HaMelech in a much broader perspective. I present it, first of all, from my reading of the Pesukim, and then we'll see Chazal, the support this has in Chazal. If you read Sefer Melachim, and you're immediately struck by one thing. Sefer Melachim, I mean the chapters dealing with Shlomo, of course. Remember, I think you're struck with the following. Both when you read about Shlomo in general, but particularly about the Mikdash. Let's start with the Mikdash. Right? Shlomo's signature achievement, not only for him, for generations, is building Beis HaMikdash. He's the person who had the privilege of building Beis HaMikdash. Right? You know, Shlomo built Beit HaMikdash. Beit Rishon, which is a much higher level than Beit Sheni, Shlomo built Beis HaMikdash. It's obviously a huge accomplishment. But when you read the Psukim throughout, I think you're struck by one thing, which is the amount of ambition which is involved in it. But put it differently, if you contrast Shlomo versus Moshe Rabbeinu, you see a very different, I think a very different picture emerges from the Psukim which describe the Mishkan and the Mikdash. Let's start from something not in the Psukim, but if you want tradition. We talk often about Mikdash Shlomo, Mikdash Hordus, Mikdash Shlomo. We never talk about Mishkan Moshe. Right? No one talks about Mishkan Moshe. We talk about the Mishkan. The Mishkan is never attributed to Moshe Rabbeinu. Who built it? Moshe Rabbeinu built it. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu built it, but somehow you feel, I think if you read, at least what I read, Parshas Vayakel Pekudei, in particular Parshas Pekudei, you don't feel that Moshe Rabbeinu puts his personality center stage. Rather, there's a cooperative effort. But differently, the Mishkan has to be built. Moshe is the leader. Moshe is responsible for guiding Am Yisrael. So therefore, Moshe is the person who is the... Right, he's the person who's in charge of the project. But you don't have the sense that his personality has to be center stage. And of course, even though the Pesukim describe his building it, they always add something which is noticeably lacking from Sefer Melachim. I'm in Shemot Perek Mem. The Mishkan was erected or was built. It's passive here. Hukama Mishkan. Vayakim Moshe to Mishkan. Now, there's a whole bunch of psukim that Moshe did ABC, but it always says like this. I'm in Mem Yutet and Shemot. Vayasim Lechseo Milamala Kasher Tziva Hashem et Moshe. Vayikach Vayten Taidut. So now he brings the Luchas Habris. He brings the tablets into the Mishkan. Kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. Kasher, then later on it says 1, 2, 3. It says 5 times. Kasher, no, 6. It says 6 times. No, 7. Kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. In other words, he puts the menorah, Kasher tziva Hashem et Moshe. He puts the Aron Kodesh, Kasher tziva, etc., etc. It's Moshe's following instructions. There's no attempt to take any claim or credit. And Moshe, and when you read Vayi Be'em HaShmini, right, when Moshe dedicates, when they actually dedicate the Mishkan, Kara Moshe Aaron, right, and Tziva Hashem, because Baruch Hu said the following. Contrast this to Shlomo. I'm in the beginning of Perek Chet in Melachim. Let me start here from Pasuk Yud Bet. As Shlomo stands, think for a moment about what's going on over there. Shlomo is dedicating the Mishkan. Everything, the Mikdash, everything has been built, everything is ready, it's the ceremony to cut the ribbon. Shlomo is there, he stands center stage after bringing a massive amount of korbanot, and he's the speaker. He speaks in the name of Am Yisrael, but we call it Tfilat Shlomo. It's an extremely moving tefillah, and all the Masechet Ta'anit is basically based upon this tefillah. But notice how he presents it. Azamar Shlomo, Hashem HaYishkon Ba'arafil, Kadosh Baruch Hu decided to dwell in the mists. Bano baniti beit zvulach. Bano baniti. I built. It's my accomplishment. Let's continue. I'm going to pasuk yutet. He describes them Shlomo is describing here how the Kadosh Baruch Hu, what Kadosh Baruch Hu told David HaMelech and him. Ki im bincha yutze mechalatzecha hu yivne bayit lishmi. Your son will build it for me. Vayakom Hashem et dvaro. Okay, Kadosh Baruch Hu fulfilled his promise to David. Vakum tachat David avi. Vayishev al kisei Yisrael. Vayivne habayit. I built it. Ani baniti, ani asiti, ani hovalti, ani anhig, etc., etc. Shlomo says, it's mine, it's me. Ani asiti et zeh. Bano baniti. You never hear Moshe Rabbeinu was anav mikol adam. You never hear Moshe Rabbeinu talking, bano baniti. But Shlomo, you hear it here throughout. When Kadosh Baruch Hu addresses him, he also makes the same point. I'm moving. Let me go back now to begin Perek Vav for a moment. Perek Vav Pasuk Bet. V'habayit asher bana hamelech Shlomo l'Hashem. The house that Shlomo built. That's it. V'habayit asher bana hamelech Shlomo. The house that Shlomo built. And skipping now to Pasuk Yud Bet in Perek Vav. V'hi dvar Hashem Shlomo l'imor. Kadosh Baruch Hu addresses Shlomo. Habayit hazeh asher ata boneh. The house that you're building. There's the whole, everything revolves here around Shlomo. Bano baniti, habayit asher bana hamelech, habayit asher ata boneh. You're building, you're the builder, everything around you. It's kibbutz, nobody else is around. Like, no one else exists, there's no one. Right? So, on one level, of course, a king speaks in the name of everyone. He is the delegate. But you get the feeling here that he is very much center stage, and he places himself center stage. Now, this fits into a pattern of what you see even other places throughout Sefer Melachim. We'll get back to some of them soon. Shlomo has a tremendous need to display his accomplishments and his ambition. Now, so this is the impression I get, but let's take a look at Chazal. Let's go to source number 7. Now, as we saw before, and this is always true, Midrashim, you can find opinions 180 degrees different. We saw it before regarding Shlomo. Now, I cherry-picked the Midrashim, which illustrate this point. I grant that there may be other Midrashim as well. But my point here is that claiming that Shlomo has ambition is not some 21st century, religious, modern Orthodox misinterpretation of Tanakh. It's deeply embedded in Chazal. Let's look here at source number 7, Midrash Tehillim. Shnei goyim bevitneich. Right, this is what Rivka Imenu was told. Goyim k'tiv. The pasuk there has two yuds. Ze mitga'e be'olamo v'ze mitgevel. Each one is proud of his accomplishment. Olamo means his achievement, and for differently, he fills the world. And his feeling is that he fills the world. He's ge'e. He's proud. But in other words, the pride here is not necessarily the positive sense. Shnei goyim k'tiv zemit gebel mo zemit gebel mo. Who are they? Adrianus. Some, if I'm not mistaken, some of the nushot are Antoninus. It doesn't matter. It's a Roman emperor. Whether it's a negative or whether it's a Russia gum like Hadrian or it's a bit of a more positive figure, it doesn't matter. You have on one level. Right, you have Shnei Goyim Bevitneich. You have Esav and Yaakov in Rivka's womb. So Esav's Ge'er is a Roman emperor. And Rivka's Ge'er is Shlomo BeYisrael. So it's like you have two Ge'im, two proud figures. One is a Roman emperor, the other Shlomo HaMelech. Now, you could claim it's only the descriptive sense of their power. But I say in light of we saw previously, and we'll see in a moment in other Midrashim, you get the feeling that it's not only, it's also the sense of self-accomplishment, ge'im, and we know what gava means. Ze ge'er be'olamo, Shlomo b'Yisrael. Now, let's continue to two other midrashim, which are pretty parallel. Let's move on to source number 10, it's number 9 for a moment. The Medrash is utilizing Tehillim to interpret Melachim. Right, you have a Mizmor, which we are familiar with, of course, in which you describe how Shlomo wants how he's pleading, if you want, or he's addressing the She'arim, like the gates, to open up and to receive the Arona Kodesh, or the Arona Brit, right? The Luchot HaBrit have to be received, and the Medrash interprets that he's pleading with them, or to put it differently, if you have to address the gates to receive it, apparently they're reluctant to do it, or the gates are refusing to do this. At Motzei, you notice, Bish'ah Shebanash Tamo Bet HaMikdash. Now, when were the tablets placed inside the Kodesh HaKodeshim? When they dedicated the Mikdash. Right, that was the whole point of dedication of the Mikdash, is to put the Arona Brit, the Luchot HaBrit, in the Arona Brit. At Motzei B'Shash Shlomo Beit HaMikdash. When Shlomo came to dedicate the Mikdash, B'Kesh Shlomo Achnis Et Aron Beit HaKodeshim. That was the climax of the whole ceremony, bringing the Arona, the Luchot, the tablets, into Arona Kodesh. V'Haya Hashar Katan. It couldn't fit in. Couldn't fit in through the door. I'm skipping here a bit. Line number three, v'chilo. In other words, the Medrash makes the calculation quickly that the gates were big enough. Right, there's enough space for the Aron to enter. It's not like trying to squeeze a refrigerator into an Israeli kitchen. It was able to. You're able to fit in easily. So why is the plea? Ela be'ota sha'ad dafku sharim. The gates sealed themselves and they refused to allow passage. Dafku sharim zebazeh. V'amar Shlomo esrim v'abarin anot. He said 24 mizmorim. This is Mizmor Chaf Dalet. So he said 24 previous mizmorim. V'lona ana. They refused to budge. Chaza. Okay, I'm skipping here a bit. Now Chazar v'amar si'u shemeshichem v'yavo melech ha'kavod. Miza melech ha'kavod. Now for a moment, skip back to number 8. It's a parallel. It's the same point. Okay, look at line number, the end of line number 2. Sushim Mashiachim Yesu Pitva Yivu Melech HaKavod Rahatu Vatrei L'Mivle. In this version, this is going on Shabbos, in this version, they don't seal themselves. They begin to chase him, to swallow him up. In other words, they're going to seal him within. The Medrash will lock Shlomo in this chamber, or the gates of the Mikdash. Why? Amru, Miyus Melech HaKavod. When Shlomo came and said, "Su sharim asheichem yasu pitchei olam v'yavo melech hakavod," how did the gates interpret this? He meant himself. Who's melech hakavod? Shlomo. V'yavo amru miuze melech hakavod. They were suspicious of him, and they were going to swallow him or to seal him within because they thought he meant himself. And why did they think that? Because he's been constantly saying, Bano, Baniti, Bano, Baniti, etc. Mirza Melech HaKavod. So Amar Lehem, he has to convince them, Hashem Yizuzu Gibor. It's like almost like being apologetic, the way the Gemara interprets it. He has to clarify that he means the real Melech HaKavod. Chazar ve'amar. How do we know this? Because he then says, Mirza Melech HaKavod, Hashem Tzvakot, to Melech HaKavod. And nevertheless, he was not, they didn't open the gates yet. Now let's go back to 9 and see why not. Chazar two three lines in the bottom of number 9. Chazar v'amar su shesherem v'mor. Okay, kevan she'amar. So the gates refused to open. There he is after all this grand speech, and it's a very awkward situation. The Aron is he is unable to place the Aron inside. Because the whole ceremony is going to fail. He's desperate. Kevan she'amar. So he says, Hashem Elokim al tashei pnei mishichecha. He invokes David's name. You know, at some point, he realizes Shlomo, is unable to bring the Aron into Beis HaMikdash. He has to invoke David's zchut. Once he says, Zechra l'chasdei David avicha, miyad nasu she'arim v'yardash v'yashamayim. Immediately, everything works. In other words, it's in David's privilege and not in his. on one level, and we'll see this later on, I hope, they're trying to humiliate him on purpose. If we are suspicious that you mean Melech HaKavod, so we will make it clear who exactly is. In other words, what's the proper attitude and approach? David, of course, is very different than Shlomo in this regard. And the Midrashim guard their way to place Shlomo in his place. Midrash continues now. Why did Shlomo have to go through all this humiliation? Al yedei shenidga'a, because of his arrogance. Shenemar shenidgevemar bano baniti beit zvul, because of that pasuk. As the Medrash picks it up, even for the Medrash, this is bread and butter. The Medrash picks this up easily. That's bano baniti is all the connotations of al yedei shenidga'a. And because of that, the Medrash says it's crucial to put things in perspective. One more quick source in this regard, two more quick sources, one-liners. Notice number Yud. I'll give you the background of the Medrash. The Medrash has a list of people, some of who call themselves, the Medrash like this. Some people call themselves Eved, God's servant, Eved Hashem, and they indeed were. Some did not claim that they were, but nevertheless they were, and it gives examples, which I omitted here for conciseness. And then it says about Shlomo, that there were those who claimed to be Eved Hashem, but were not. Notice them, Shlomo karatzmo Eved. Shlomo aspired or claimed to be Eved Hashem. Eved Hashem is a very, very high madrega. It's not, you know, not everyone calls Eved Hashem. Shlomo karatzmo Eved shenemar v'tad avchalim shuvea v'akadosh baruch hu lo kro Eved. When Shlomo says, I'm your servant, and therefore please, give me Sati Lishmaya, because Rosh says, I do it for the sake of my Eved, but the Eved is David, Leman David Avdi. In other words, Shlomo's self-image, the Medrash seems to be claiming, is much more elevated than it really should be. And we'll take another same point in a second, Gemara. Bikesh kotzus do divi chayfetz, bikesh kohelet kodesh Shlomo, of course, liot kim Moshe, yet stand, no, Shlomo aspired to be like Moshe Rabbeinu. No, like, why only Moshe? Me too. Because, of course, because he was the chacham mikol adam, because he was indeed so wise, so he wanted to be just like Moshe, yet stabat kov amralo, vilokam nevi bizok kim Moshe, only Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is unique. You are very wise, etc., etc., but you are not the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is unique. A second opinion there claims that Shlomo indeed was at Moshe's level in terms of wisdom. But once more, you see here that Bikesh Kohelet Liot Kemoshe. Okay, having said all this, I think Shlomo is deeply ambitious. And we don't have time for this now, but if you go back to Sefer Melachim, notice how the building of his palace is intertwined with the description of building the Mikdash. You have Perek Vav describes building the Mikdash, Perek Chet describes the Mikdash, the second half of Perek Zayin, and the first half of Perek Zayin, building his palace. Right, everything is intertwined over there. He builds the palace. Some of the measurements are not that far from the Mishkan. You have the feeling that, right, Vayven et Beito, Beit Hashem et Beito, so there's this kind of like everything is at some level for his palatial glory. He has there's the mikdash and there's the his beito. This is crucial to say. Shlomo's great privilege, his great zchut, is he channeled his all of this into positive things. Many ambitious people don't channel to building Beis HaMikdash. Shlomo was able to channel all of this sense, all this ambition, which is, as I said before, I think it's very, very prominent. He was able to channel this into positive channels, which were differently to build the Mikdash. He takes it upon himself to build a Mikdash, and he builds a grand Mikdash because he wants his ambition to be channeled to the right way. But nevertheless, it remains problematic. It was on one level, yes, it's a tremendous accomplishment. And my Chazal tell us, if a person has violent impulses, he should become a shochet. In other words, take your violence and channel it to the right, to the proper thing. But nevertheless, so on one level, I think it's a huge lesson to be learned. All of us have our feelings and personal characteristics. The trick is to channel them to the proper to proper positive places. And nevertheless, it remains problematic because when we say, even if you channel it properly, when you say Melech HaKavod, it becomes ambivalent, or there's a dual meaning there, etc. Okay, now let's move on to, so we've seen the ambition. So now, what's going on with the Nashim? What seems to me is the following. And here we have to, after Shlomo finished building the Mikdash, this is Perek Vav Zayin Chet, it occupies a central place in, not only by us, but in Shlomo's whole company. I think to this very day, we ask who is Shlomo Melech, which Shlomo in Tanakh? You say Melachim Perek Vav Zayin Chet. That's the focus. But the problem is now Perek Tet Pasuk Aleph. Vayehi kichalot Shlomo livnot et Beit Hashem ve Beit Hamelech. Said before, right? These projects which go together and they're in tandem. Beit Hashem, Beit Hamelech, vet kol chesek Shlomo asher chafetz. Vayira Hashem al Shlomo sheinit kasher nav begivon. This is the second revelation to Shlomo. And the Tanakh, Tanakh says it here explicitly. This is parallel to the previous revelation. There's a second time. Why? And then, because Baruch Hu repeats the things he said previously, and he says to him, "Kdashti shebanita." Once more, you built. Asum shmi sham. Now he begins to warn Shlomo for proper religious behavior. Right, the whole nevuah here is a warning. You built a mikdash, and vayu einayv lisham kolamin. The shechina will be in the mikdash all the time. And now this is Perek Tepasuk Dalit. If you follow in David's footsteps and you remain faithful to Kodesh Baruch Hu and you're loyal to the mikdash, etc., things will be fine. But if not, so then that'll be for the following punishments. Like, isn't this strange? We just built a mikdash, right? We're just coming home from building based on mikdash. Because Baruch Hu immediately feels a need to address Shlomo and to warn him in no uncertain terms, be careful. Now, the suspicion here is very strong. Because Baruch Hu feels that it's going to be a problem. Because Baruch Hu senses a crisis in the making. And I think the crisis is, there's a letdown. Now that he's finished this huge project, and Shlomo's built upon huge grand projects, what do you do now? He's not built just to run their course. He needs a new project. He needs the place to channel the ambition. Because Baruch Hu here is concerned. He's concerned that after Shlomo finished and concluded the mikdash, there'll be a letdown. And indeed, this is what begins to happen. So stage A, he looks outward. And we have the story how he begins to cooperate with Hiram and enter into even closer diplomatic ties. By the way, I should add parenthetically that there's a Nevuah in Yechezkel, Perek Chafchet, which talks about Hiram in no uncertain terms of Ga'ava. Right? It talks about Tzor with all its pride because of its commerce and wealth. The interesting thing is the Medrash there claims that the same pride was part of it had to do with building the Mikdash. Hiram participated in building the Mikdash. Part of the pride had to do with that. In other words, Shlomo and Hiram are both accused by the Medrash of having pride in building the Mikdash, and they cooperate. They're working hand in glove together. As the Medrash identifies the same problem in both of them, and that's why they are able to cooperate so well. Now, he begins with Hiram. Then the story of Malkat Shva. Of course, Malkat Shva is to display his glory, to display how great he is. Everyone, he sees everything is, it's exactly what we've seen before, right? All the kavod, here it is, all the glory and dignity, all of it on display over there, and Malkat Shva is extremely impressed. After that, we have the Nashim Nochriyot. In other words, there's the problem here, the real problem is, when you begin looking outward, when the project, when the Mikdash is over, was weiter, what happens next? And he's in trouble. Okay, now let's get finally to the crux of the point. What's going on with the woman? And here I make the following claim. We saw in the beginning, Shimon Yochai said, I have liznot. Right, I said before here, the sexual desire is what is the root of the problem. We saw the other one, Keruv. The Keruv is very difficult because even though I tried to explain it, I think nevertheless it runs pretty counter to the Pshat, and also it is a bit far-fetched. That's some of your responses, which may be a bit far-fetched, but they illustrate the problem, the point. I think what's going on is the following. You have to view this in the context of everything we spoke about until now, but notice the following. Shlomo doesn't only take wives. He amasses horses, or to put it differently, Ferraris, Cadillacs, the equivalent of those once upon a time, or think Queen of England. He amasses horses, he amasses wealth, and it talks about massive wealth and women. To put it differently, what he's trying to do is he's hoarding. He wants to display his great wealth. He wants literally a fleet of Ferraris. That's what he wants. And not because he needs them to get from here to there, because this is part of his glory. And the same is true. He wants many. When you're talking about, look in Perek Yud Aleph, Pasuk. Pasuk Gimel. Vil Nashim Sarot Shva Meot. 1,000 wives. Now, it doesn't matter whether 1,000 is, they count one by one. It means the following. When we talk about 1,000 wives, you're talking about romantic love. You're not talking about Nashavi Tut Levavot, a deep, intimate connection with Bat Paro. Well, maybe only Bat Paro. But you're talking here about a person who has a need to put on display his power. Now, we already saw, I didn't quote it before, but it's very stated in Perek Gimel that he had diplomatic marriages. Right, it says, Vaitchatein Shlomo et Paro. He married Paro. To put it differently, it's a diplomatic marriage. So he used the marriages in Perek Gimel for diplomatic purposes. Or to put it differently, for his glory or his power. Over here, it's the same. Just that it may be over here also for diplomatic purposes, but even more so, I think it's for the purpose of display, to show how much glory he has and how great he is and how much he has so many, and that's why they go hand in hand. Nashim, Susim, Kesef, it all goes together. When the Torah talks about Le'arbelo Nashim, Arbelo Susim, it's this purpose of display. That a king has to feel that he's a servant serving the people and not someone who's amassing personal glory and personal wealth at the expense of the people. And here's the root of the problem, is that Shlomo, because of the need, so before we had the Beis HaMikdash, lahav dofaf evdolot, but now what happens is he wants, as part of the project, the display to Malkat Shiva, so now he has Nashim Rabot, and Kesef Rav, and Susim, and it's rooted, in other words, the problem is rooted basically in ambition, not in sexual appetite, and not in Keruv, it's rooted in ambition. Now, what's the problem? So let me go back to the Gemara Shabbat that we spoke about before. Now, let's go back to Psukim first. The Psukim talk, Vayelech Shlomo, I'm here in the Perek Yud Aleph Suke. וילך שלמה אחרי השטורת אלוהי צידונים, אחרי מלקום שיקוץ המונים. Okay, it's a list of idols that he follows. ויה שלמה הרע בעיני השם. And now, next פרק ידע פסוק זין. אז יבנה שלמה במה לקמוש שיקוץ מואב. He builds an altar or a temple for כמוש שיקוץ מואב, לעבודה זרה. And there's a whole list. And then it says, and all his wives are busy bringing karbanot and offerings and whatnot and incense to various idols. And all this is going on in the mountains and neighborhoods of Yerushalayim. Now, what does the Gemara tell us? Let's go back to source number 5, or hey. It says, Shlomo didn't worship Avodah Zarah, Chas v'shalom. But, Hayal limchod lo micha. He should have protested, but he didn't. Now, it says that he worships Avodah, right? It says, Vayelech Shlomachri Ashtoret. He followed Avodah Zarah. He doesn't say that he didn't tell his wives not to do it. It says he followed the Avodah Zarah. I think the point is as follows. If a person is eating non-kosher, and I don't tell him, so there's a mitzvah I should tell him, if I know how to, if it's called mitzvah tochecha, hochech tochecha tamitecha, a person is violating a mitzvah, you are supposed to point it out to him, presumably in a sensitive and in a way that's sensitive and doesn't get him even angrier, but mitzvah tochecha. If you don't, I can say that maybe you are a bit indifferent either to him, because you're allowing him to basically harm himself religiously. We may be indifferent also to kashrus. You know, you don't, but at the end of the day, not eating kosher food is a mitzvah. And if someone else eats non-kosher, he has a problem. It's a personal problem. The problem with Avodah Zarah is very different. When the Gemara tells us that he didn't protest, the problem there is not that he simply wasn't sensitive enough to the wives, and he was letting them go to Chas v'Shalom, and he was not caring for their souls. The problem is, Avodah Zarah is a due prohibition. And what's more, if we had another hour, I would give you a halachic shir to illustrate this halachically. But I'll set a point in 1 minute, and not halachically, there's a dual problem. One is worshiping. Lo tishtachaveh lahem v'lo te'ovdeim. You can't worship Avodah Zarah. Worshiping Avodah Zarah means accepting their divinity, accepting, recognizing their power, recognizing that they control the world. There's another problem, which is legitimacy. Or lo yeh elohim achirim. And now the real pasuk is v'shem elohim achirim tazkiru lo yishamal picha. Don't mention Avodah Zarah. What does that mean? I'm not worshiping Chas v'Shalom. It means I recognize, interfaith. I'm Jewish, you're Catholic, we get along together, you know, I'll go visit the Pope because the Pope can give a lot of kavod. And in other words, the problem is giving legitimacy, recognition. If the problem is not worship. I can, in other words, some certain things, I'm a citizen of the State of Israel, so I'm subject to its laws. I'm not a citizen of Denmark, but I recognize that Denmark exists. And I don't have any problem with the fact that there's a sovereign country called Denmark or Thailand or whatever. So I'm not subject to its laws, but I recognize it. Avodah Zarah, that's also asur, certainly for a Jew. Avodah Zarah for a Jew, it means exclusivity, not only in worship. It means exclusivity in recognition. And the moment that you're willing to give recognition, that's what Chazal say, it's actually to say to someone, meet me in the corner, you know, at the corner next to the church. Or there are many other. Shemelachim lo tazkiru. It means you cannot give the honor and dignity, not the worship. No, I can honor and provide and give dignity to entities that I'm totally not subordinate to. No, but Avodah Zarah, that's also asur. There is a prohibition upon providing any recognition. Avodah Zarah denies because Baruch Hu's presence in the world, certainly for a Jew, because it's a denial of the divine presence. It is also not only to worship it, it's also to recognize it. And when you come and say, okay, you know, if you're Shlomo Melech and you say, I'll go to Shul Shabbos morning, I'll say Piyutim, but you can go to your church and to your Bama, to your Kmosh, Shikutz Moav, it means, okay, so you know, each one, Goy B'Shem Elohav, you know, each one can do, when you allow that to happen in Yerushalayim, let me remind you, there's a special Isur D'Oraita, for allowing Avodah Zarah in Eretz Yisrael. Lo tavi toival beitecha, etc. You cannot, there's a special lav of having Avodah Zarah in Israel. And the point is that Avodah Zarah is not only a personal problem. With kashrus, it's a personal problem. But with Avodah Zarah, it isn't. Because it's a denial of the Kodesh Baruch Hu. And this is the problem. Shlomo, the root of the problem was the ambition and the desire to have many women, as trophies, so to speak, the desire to marry important, dignified women, and the price is recognition of Avodah Zarah. At some deeper level, when in order to satisfy your ambition, you allow Avodah Zarah, so it basically means you've not given the Kodesh Baruch Hu the proper place in the grand scheme of things. It's true about yourself, whether are you an Eved? What does it mean an Eved? An Eved means you're subordinate totally. You subordinate your identity. you basically you place your identity at Kadosh Baruch Hu's disposal. That's why Shlomo's an Eved. He's an Ohev Hashem. He's an Eved Hashem. Because being Eved, you have to basically lose your identity or actually hand over identity to the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So he doesn't do that. And therefore, because Avodah Zarah is the same thing. The exclusivity of Kadosh Baruch Hu means is exclusive at the expense of all human beings and exclusive all things. This is the problem. Was Shlomo Oved Avodah Zarah? He says he wasn't Oved Avodah Zarah worshiping. Chas v'shalom. All those opinions, Shlomo Kol Omer Shlomo Chata Inu Al Toeh, it's correct. He never worshipped Avodah Zarah. It's also correct that Hayah Limchot, he should have protested, and therefore he sinned. It's also correct, not only should they have protested, that by not doing that, in the essence, not technically, but in the essence, it is Avodah Zarah. And that's why everyone is right in a sense. He's not, in essence, he's a chote, even though maybe technically, maybe less so, but the root of the whole thing is the ambition. Okay, now, I know it's the standard, so one final sentence. In Tanakh, it just ends, it finishes like this, you know, Ve'asara, and then he leaves the stage. In Chazal said, in order, Kadosh Baruch Hu had to basically close out the circle. Look at the last source. It's a pasuk in Kohelet. What's a person like? What does Kohelet say? Right? Everything is vain. What does this mean? Oh, it basically means that Shlomo, Chazal claimed, Shlomo was booted out of Yerushalayim, he lost everything. According to Chazal, Shlomo was like the prince and the pauper. He lost everything. He's wandering alone, unrecognized, only with a knapsack on his back. Nothing else. Michazer Ptachim. Shlomo was reduced to poverty, according to Chazal. And there are two opinions. One is Melech Vehedyot. The other, Melech Vehedyot and Melech. One says Shlomo lost it all. He never returned. At the end of the day, why? Because if you're so prideful, you end up with nothing. The other being said, he learned a lesson, which is all of Sefer Kohelet, and then he returned to his former glory. In other words, Chazal have a deep need that Kohelet is not simply this kind of cynicism in life. Chazal want to claim that Kohelet is a lesson learned. You know, it's, how do you interpret Kohelet is a big question. But at the end of the day, this Midrash is telling us Kohelet means Shlomo had to learn a lesson. It took a long time, but the lesson is Aleph, Havel Havalim, and because of his great glory, etc., he needed to learn the deep lesson. Havel, you know, called Havel. Sof davar kol nishma, to kim yira, ki zeh kol ha'adam. Thank you very much.